All right, welcome. You're listening to the Kraz Files podcast with Adam, and this is part of one of my latest podcast shows with author and researcher John Hamer. We looked at his new book, JFK, A Very British Coup, The Definitive Truth of the Assassination. So great chatting with John. If you would like to hear the rest of this podcast and hear other great podcasts that I'm doing, you can now become a member and support real independent media over on my website, krazfiles.com. It's just $5 a month and helps me to continue here. It's getting harder and harder by the day and I need some support. So just $5 a month really helps me out, and that's Australian. So log in over there. All the details are up there, and all the information. If you need help or you need to contact me, I'm onto it very quickly. So sign up today to get access to all my podcasts, original podcasts. I feel like we're doing really original, unique podcasts here, and other great content as well. So check it out, krazfiles.com. Thanks for listening. Researcher John Hamer is plugging in with me tonight for a great podcast just to talk about his new book. But it's the same day. It's actually Wednesday for you, John, Wednesday morning around 10:40. How are you going?
I'm good, thanks, Adam. How are you?
All right. We had a great podcast about your Titanic work, and wanted to plug in with you to talk about your new book on JFK. So this is A Very British Coup, The Definitive Truth of the Assassination of JFK. So is this your latest book? You're working, this is the one that you've got out recently?
Yeah, this was published in about March or early April. But I actually have two others on the go right now. One of which is called The Falsification of Science, which is a sister volume to my Falsification of History, which I published about 7 years ago. And also I'm writing a book with a friend in America who on the 5G and how that connects into the transhumanism agenda, you know, the 5G agenda, which, as we know, is coming along very, very soon, and all the problems that's likely to bring to us all.
Oh, my boy. It never ends. Well, you're certainly not going to run out of material in today's world, are you? That will be fantastic. And we're going to... I'll just mention your website, of course, the Falsification of History. .co.uk. That's your book, actually, I'm reading now, but your website is, of course, The Falsification of History. .co.uk. Yeah, so if people want to click on there, there's a wealth of information. All your book info is up there as well for folks. I got your JFK, A Very British Coup. Straight away, it stood out for me, and I'm into that now, quite a way in on my Kindle. We were just talking before we started. I don't know where to go with this because you've written a shorter book, but it's the information in here is just mind-boggling. It really is. And, of course, I knew a lot of this, and I try to study a lot of this, especially in regards to the banking and real history. It's fascinating. I've done shows on Kennedy. I did one with Don Fox on the Kennedy assassination. I've read a lot of material. I've looked at videos, everything, but I haven't picked up anything like this, John. And it's really, really fascinating stuff. I was reading about Joe Kennedy as well, and his life with the booze and the Kennedy family. It's like an incredible movie, you know, when you're reading this book, but it's real life. It's absolutely fascinating. And the whole first section of this book, of course, when I started reading it, and you were talking about the money and maritime law and the British Crown and who runs who and all this system and who really controls the United States and everything. And it just blew me away because it's not something I originally thought about. And you talk about the Jesuits and the Vatican and the money, that the incredible amount of wealth these people have. But this is really astonishing stuff, and I think it's maybe people just because the Kennedy assassination in itself, with him getting his head blown off in front of the whole planet, I mean, that sticks in history, and that's what's in everyone's minds. And they think, yeah. Oh, there's conspiracy theories around it, and the, you know, who shot him and all this and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, no yeah. one looks at the building blocks here, and that's what you've done in the book. You have to really go back in history and go through all of this before you even get to the assassination itself. And in your book, when you kind of get to the assassination, or you don't really need to, you can work out why it was done, because you go into great detail. I loved your sections there on Gaddafi and you know, Saddam Hussein, and this is how they get rid of people as well. But all we can do with such a dense book like this, it's you know, there's so much information, and we can just go through sections and the bullet points for folks and try and promote it and hope they will go and get the editions. I got the Kindle, and there's the paperback as well, so I'll put all that information up. I guess we could talk to you a little bit about this British crown, because I found this fascinating, this control within London, this kind of system within itself that answers to nobody. Why don't we start there and build?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to sort of reiterate what you were saying about the book and how it's structured, yeah. I mean, I had to... I started off just writing about the assassination, and then I realized that, well, I need to put a little bit of background in and how all this came about. And it just went sort of backwards from there, in effect. And eventually you realize that it's just another one of the jigsaw puzzle pieces in the grand chessboard, you know, the big conspiracy picture, if you like, for want of a better phrase. And I mean, it started off as just being, as I say, about the assassination. But then you realize that actually, the preamble to the assassination is far more complex than it's ever given any credence for, you know. And as you say, the Crown Empire is the starting point for that. The British Crown Empire, for those people who are not familiar with the term, or the British Crown, as it's often called, people think that that is somehow related to the monarchy. Well, it is related to the monarchy, but it's not actually the monarchy itself. What the British Crown means, it's an organisation that is... It incorporates the monarchy in there, but it's really a big umbrella organization that actually, you know, let's not beat about the bush here, it actually rules the world. Okay, so basically I believe that the world is ruled from London, from the city of London, which is the heart of the what we call the Crown Empire. The city of London is a separate entity, very much like Washington DC is in the States. Mm. Washington DC is the headquarters of the military empire, and the Vatican in Italy, that's the headquarters of the religious empire. Well, the city of London, which is a separate city state, just like those other two, is the headquarters of the financial world. It's just one square mile in area. In the heart of the city of London, but it's actually called the City of London as distinct from London itself. It's called the City, and it contains things like the Bank of England, Lloyd's of London, which is the biggest insurer in the world. It's got all the British Stock Exchange there, the head offices of 385 banks, most of the UK newspapers, Freemasonry, the whole entire legal apparatus of the whole world is situated in the City of London, and that consists of the four inns of court, as they're called, and it's actually tax exempt as well, is the City of London, and the amount of money that passes through it and it deals with on a daily basis is just mind-blowing. It's just staggering. People wouldn't believe the amounts of money that are involved there.
Yeah, that's right. Where's this area exactly, John, in the City of London that we're talking
about?
It's
just slightly to the east of the city centre. It incorporates, for those who know London, incorporates where the Tower of London is, and all and the Bank of England, and that area, which is, as I say, just slightly to the east of the actual city itself. Mm. But it's also on the banks of the River Thames as well. So it is literally in the heart of the you know, London itself, but it is just slightly to the east, and it's a very distinct area. It has its own Lord Mayor, for example. It's got its own police force. It's just a totally separate entity, and it's not subject to UK law either. It has its own laws. For example, when the Queen visits the city, you know, for ceremonial occasions or whatever, she has to wait at the Temple Bar, which is the ancient entrance to that city, and has to be greeted by the Lord Mayor of the city, and she bows to him because she is subservient to him. And that, just to me, is a demonstration of how powerful that entity is, the Crown Empire, which is situated within that city of London, and which is, you know, it's the entity that basically controls the world finances and much of everything else as well.
Yeah, and the British monarchy and all of this with your royals and queen and you just mentioned. Is this kind of set up as, I mean, do these people, are they just parts of the puzzle here? Do they have that much power, or is it more kind of set up as a distraction for the public to sort of suck them in and keep the whole world looking in their direction as all the drama of the royals come out? But the power always, to me, seems like it was beyond them in that part of the world.
The answer to that, Adam, is it's a bit of both. Yeah, I mean, they are figureheads in a sense. They're there as a distraction, as you also say, but they are very powerful nevertheless. They do have a big. I'm not saying they're the ultimate power, because they ain't, but they are. They do have a lot of intrinsic power themselves. You know, for example, it's getting off the topic a little bit, but I believe it was the royals that were behind the assassination of Diana, for example, and not just me. A lot of people believe that as well. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of evidence to back that up as well. So yes, they do have power in their own right. They're not just purely figureheads, but they don't own the ultimate power. That's the big money men like the Rothschilds, and in the States, the Rockefellers. They're the prime movers, really, within the whole thing. But everything is, it's so difficult to get across in such a short program, but everything is intrinsically connected back to that Crown Empire. You know, for example, you mentioned briefly in the introduction about the States, United States, and how that was, I'll just expand on it a little bit, that was actually ostensibly made independent in the American War of Independence. But that never actually happened. Obviously, the War of Independence happened. I don't mean that. What I mean was that they were never made independent. It was just a front. It was, in fact, it was five Temple Bar attorneys, and Temple Bar is the legal headquarters. It was five Temple Bar attorneys that actually signed the American Declaration of Independence. So you can see that that it never really happened as we're told it happened. It was just a front to give the impression that America is independent from Britain, and it certainly isn't. Obviously, it's a little bit more independent than say Australia, New Zealand, Canada is, because they're part of the so-called Commonwealth. But the States, nevertheless, is very much driven by the UK, and this is how the Kennedy story starts, because it's the Crown Empire that controls almost everything that goes on, and they have intrinsic links into, you know, things like the FBI, the CIA, the Mafia, the Catholic Church, which is very powerful in the States as well. All these institutions, Israel, of course, you know, the massive links to Israel and what's going on there. And, they obviously run a lot of the industry as well, especially things like big oil, and obviously the monetary system, the Federal Reserve as well. That's all linked back to the Crown in the City of London. Despite the appearance of America being totally independent, it's not. It's governed by the Crown Empire. And this is where the story of the assassination starts, because Kennedy was, what happened was in late 1961, JFK's father Joe, who had previously controlled both his sons, John and Bobby, with a iron fist, really. I mean, he actually really, really controlled them and kept them in check and make sure they didn't upset anyone. Well, in 1961, Joe had a serious stroke, and it absolutely devastated him, and he never spoke again, and he died shortly afterwards, a few years afterwards. But he, at that point, he lost control of his sons, and that's when they started, shall we say, getting a little bit out of hand and rattling people and organizations' cages that maybe they shouldn't have done. And so it was this action that they did, that they took in various areas, which upset a lot of different institutions, and all these institutions linked back into the Crown. So the impetus for the assassination came from the British Crown, and really that's what the book's about. And as you rightly say, it's an extremely convoluted story, far too complicated to actually do it justice in a program such as this, unfortunately. But we can talk around the edges of it.
Of course, and promote the book. That's what it's about. No, we'd be here for months, I feel. Talking about the Crown, you had some figures in your book, just in regards to, you were illustrating the amount of money, you know, trillions, that are going through here, and you can't fathom this, can you? The amount of money going through there, and the control, I guess. Yeah, you're talking about, you know, the military, and I guess you'd be talking about NATO, and then you start to get that picture in your book that when people don't do what these people want in the way that they want, they just get rid of them. And exactly. That's gone through history, hasn't it? But what kind of, illustrate that a little bit, the kind of amount of money that we're talking about here from the Crown and their banks and all of this. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a little bit from my own personal experience. Not that amount of money, you understand. But in the 90s, I worked in the IT industry. I was a software consultant for not a large firm, but a medium-sized firm. And we won a contract with the City of London, with the City of London Corporation, which is the council, if you like, that runs the City of London, to update all their accounting software. And it was a very lucrative contract, several millions. And we did all the initial testing and all that. And then sort of partway through the initial testing phase, but obviously before it went live, that we hit a problem. And the problem was that our software only went up to, only had fields of 9 digits for monetary amounts. Okay, so what's 9 digits? Is that, that's a billion, isn't it? It's a, Or is it? No, it goes up to 10 billion, doesn't it? 9 digits. So yeah, you could account for sums of up to £10 billion or whatever currency you wanted in that software, which we'd never had a problem before. That was always totally adequate, you know, for one single transaction, the maximum of 10 billion. But no, the City of London came to us and said, look, we've got a problem here. These fields are not big enough. We need fields of 14 digits. Okay, and so we're like, you know, okay, 14 digits, right. Well, just to put that in perspective, that is 100 trillion. Okay, so they needed to account for sums of £100 trillion. Mm. Now, I think in the book there's an illustration of what $1 trillion looks like, $1 trillion looks like. And again, I can't describe to you, you know, over the air what it looks like. But, you know, if anyone does buy my book, they will see what a depiction of $1 trillion looks like. And it's absolutely mind-blowing.
Stacked on pallets.
Stacked on pallets that stretch for hundreds of yards. You know, I think the depiction is of the White House and all these pallets double-stacked with pallet full of $100 bills, not $1 bills. So, you know, it just goes on forever, this depiction. And really, it's so difficult for people to get their heads around what 1 trillion means, because you sort of lump it together with a million and a billion, don't you? But it's much, 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 much bigger than that kind of sum. And so I did that to actually illustrate to people exactly how, what, you know, the kind of figures that we're talking about And that was only 1 trillion, and we were talking about 100 times that. So it's just literally mind blowing. And I think that it just illustrates that we don't really know what goes on in the background and how much money is being moved about and what it's being used for and all the rest of it.
Mm.
It's staggering, utterly staggering.
Yeah, it is. And talk a little bit, John, about the Federal Reserve and the connections with the Rothschild empire. We know that so well. We hear about it all the time. How's this connected with the Crown? And have you got a scope of, was this around World War II time? I mean, it all seemed to be planned as well. You've got a sort of scope of this connection, and because and maybe talk a little bit about the Zionist sort of movement. We hear about the whole Jewish thing and with the Rothschilds and all this, but the state of Israel, the creation of it. This whole connection is very interesting, especially when you're throwing in the Vatican as well. People are like, who, what, what? You got the Rothschilds, America, the British Crown, the Vatican. Where, who, what's going on? it's all interconnected in such an incredible way, and it's done through money.
Yeah, how long have we got? Did you say? Sorry, joking. Yeah, I mean, she's a big topic. You're right. Yeah, I mean, obviously the Rothschilds are Jewish, and they're all connected to Israel. I mean, some people say that Israel is the land of the Rothschilds, and I would tend to agree with that. I mean, Israel is an artificially created state, as you rightly said, after World War II, and it was created in order to make a base in the Middle East for waging war. Which is what they have done in the past. But that's sort of getting off the topic slightly. But it is all intrinsically connected, as you say. I mean, the Rothschilds were the original founders of most European central banks, but they do control them all now. The reason I said most and not all is because the original European central bank was the Bank of Amsterdam in Holland. And that wasn't formed by the Rothschilds. That was pre-Rothschild days, but eventually they did take that over. But yes, the Bank of England is Rothschild-owned. All the central banks in the world are Rothschild-owned now, and including the Federal Reserve. And that's why they're all connected through that Rothschild connection. For anyone who's listening who doesn't understand what a central bank is the organization within any country that is responsible for the creation of money, and that is absolutely done fraudulently. They just create it out of thin air. They loan it to the government at interest, and that's why we have these huge national debts, because the interest is so vast that it's unpayable. And it's a vicious cycle, because the only way that you can pay back that interest is to print more money, which also comes with its interest added. And so therefore, that's why national debts just keep on going through the roof, and it's all owed to the Rothschild family. What else can I tell you about it?
It's incredible. And I was going to also ask you to tie in a little bit, just an explanation, because I know we're under this as well. You're just mentioning in your book about maritime law. Could you just sort of cover the basic points of maritime law and what that means for countries like Australia and because we really do seem like a corporation. I think our politicians, everybody's starting to see that they're just puppets up there, but they don't really run anything. But maritime law is an important subject that you do cover in the book.
It is. Yeah, well, basically what the situation is regarding that is that we have to go back to the Magna Carta in England in the year 1215, when it was signed by King John, and which took away his power. Okay, bear with me on this. I know it sounds a bit as though we're going back a long time, and we obviously are. But the Magna Carta took away King John's absolute power to do anything he wanted, and it brought a little bit of power back to the people. And part of that Magna Carta was the issue of what's called common law. Now, and that cannot be usurped. Common law is the only legal, or the only lawful law, if that makes sense. Okay, and we need to distinguish between lawful and legal here, because lawful is pertaining to common law, which is the only law, and legal refers to maritime law, which again I'll come on to very shortly. Okay, so common law simply states that you shall do no harm to anyone, or by inaction cause harm to befall anyone. And that's it. That's the entirety of the law, and that's what the law should be. Obviously, with various penalties for, you know, however you break that edict, if you like. But that is, that should be the whole of the law. That is what's called common law. Okay, so how the powers that be got around this little conundrum, because they can't do away with the Magna Carta and common law. It's deeply embedded into society, and they can't do anything about it. So what they've done, they've bypassed it instead, and they use what's called maritime law. Now, maritime law is the law that we operate under, and it consists of not laws. They call them laws, but they're not laws. They're actually statutes, and they're what we think of as laws, such as, you know, any other law you can think of that is pertaining to any particular country. It's not a law, it's a statute. And it's that those statutes that are maritime law. And for example, maritime law is noted in courts, I know in the UK and in the US, I'm not sure about Australia, by a gold fringe around the flag in the court. So, And it's the same on military uniforms as well. The country's flag on the sleeve of the military uniforms has a gold or a yellow fringe around it. And that means that they're operating under maritime law, not common law, not the law of the land, which is common law, the law of the land. It's actually maritime law. And this is what gives them the power to do basically whatever they want with the laws, because, you know, they're not governed by the constructs of common law. So it's in a very small nutshell. I mean, that's obviously another very wide topic that I would advise people, if they're interested in looking that any deeper, to actually Google that or use whatever search engine is your preference. And because there's a lot of stuff out there on the internet about it, and it's all, you know, it's all very interesting, and it's all true, of course, as well. You know, and as you sort of alluded to as well, countries are not countries as we think of them as the private corporations run by shareholders, stockholders, you know. So it's, again, it's all part of that same thing.
It's I've got highlights galore in this book. I just have a little section here. I'll read it out. Our names, when spelt in all capital letters, e.g. John Smith, represent a fictitious corporation or a trust created in our name by the government through the Treasury Department at our births. So then we get our birth certificate. Each and every time a child is born, a new corporate trust is generated using our names in all capital letters in order to maintain control of our lives. They must do this because all governments are corporations, and they can legally operate only under commercial law, the law of contracts. So this is what you're talking about here. Yes. Could you talk a little bit about this, John, at birth and the birth certificate and what you're talking about here in this book? We are under contract. Yeah. I mean, this is a little bit frightening for people when they see this stuff. A lot of people are getting into this now, but you just see it everywhere, you know. It's just so crazy to think that you feel like you're not bringing a human being into the world. You're bringing a product that's owned by a corporation. There's people sit up there and say, "I'm your government. You know, I'm a politician. I do this and I do that." Yeah. It's really crazy, isn't it? So this is all part of the maritime law you were mentioning.
It is. I mean, it's all intrinsically connected, like everything else. But it's. Yeah, as you say, you know, the writing your name in capital letters, and this is why you have to do this on a form. You have to write, you know, they always say use block capital letters when you're filling out a form, and then you sign it, obviously with your normal signature. But it's those block capitals that actually denote you're not a living entity. You are just, as you say, you're just a in effect, you're just a machine. You know, you're just part of their infrastructure, and that's how they can control you. If you, asserted your rights as a living flesh and blood human being and just used non-capital letters, they couldn't exert their control over you. It would mean you'd be an outcast from society, of course, because you have to fulfill all these criteria before you actually, you know, such things as applying for driving license, passports, all that sort of stuff. It's all got to be done in this way. You couldn't actually apply as a living, breathing human being. You have to apply as this entity that they've created that represents you at birth, and that's how they control you. And again, it's bypassing common law. And it sat in trust for each and every one of us is a huge sum of money that they use themselves. Okay, but I know that some people have actually gone through the process, and it's a very convoluted and complex process of actually divorcing themselves from this legal entity, this old block, you know, you're naming old block capitals, and actually won or obtained the money that sits in trust for them, which otherwise you would never have access to, and which they obviously use themselves. So there's this vast fortune sat somewhere, God knows where, that is, you know, as I say, in trust for each and every one of us, and it's a huge sum of money. But if anyone actually finds out how to do that, and I certainly don't know how to do it, then please let me know, and I'll have a go myself.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It is. I mean, to anyone who's not come across all this stuff before, it's mind blowing. I mean, it sounds like I'm a crazy person. Well, maybe I am, but
that's
good.
Cool.
You know what I'm saying? It's like. Who is this guy? You know, what the hell is he talking about? It's just absolutely...
What the hell does this have to do with Kennedy?
Well, yeah, indeed. But as we all know, it's a huge jigsaw puzzle, isn't it? And this is just one tiny little piece in the corner of the...
No, it's...
In the corner of the thing, you know, so...
That's right. Yeah. It's a spider's web that they've created, haven't they? That's why I've done podcasts on this, but it's just so, I find it really hard to get my mind around all of this, especially if we're looking at money. You know, when someone goes in and they borrow money to get a mortgage to buy a house, and how there isn't actually any money, and you know how they created this system, and the debt-based interest sort of system is really astonishing. Yeah. It's actually, I don't know what you would say it is. It's just evil.
It's fraudulent for a start.
Yeah, but it's incredibly cunning, isn't it? It's just the mindset behind it and how they've done it. It really is. And sometimes it gives me a headache.
I know. I mean, I've been doing this stuff for 20 years almost, and you know, at first things shock you, but eventually you sort of become numb to it all, and it just, well, nothing shocks you anymore. You just accept things, obviously after researching them. I mean, I just accept any old garbage, you know. But after doing the due diligence and the research, and you unearth information, you know, it can be shocking, but like I say, as time goes on, you realize that, well, nothing shocks me anymore, and really it doesn't. You know, you could basically tell me anything about what's going on in the world, and even if it's new information, and it wouldn't particularly shock me, because it would just say, oh yeah, well, that makes sense, that fits in with all the rest, you know, and that's how it goes.
It's exhausting as a human being trying to think, how am I going to get out of it? And then when you're a parent and you bring children into the
thanks for listening, folks. If you'd like to hear more of the rest of this podcast, you can log on to my website, crazfiles.com, and become a member. Your support is greatly appreciated. So thanks for listening to this snippet, and take care.